life was juicy, wrapped up in a bow. Tiptoeing through flower trees comes tragedy. A lot of noise.
Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. I hated to shut that off. I'm going to add that on in the end because my guest for today, she is incredible and she's a singer and that's her music. So I will add that when we are closing out. So hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hala Citron and I am owner and founder of I Am Creative. And I am on a mission to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and to empower people, especially adults, to own their talents that come in so many different forms. So to give you a little bit of a background, this podcast was born from I Am Creative, and it is the perfect space where I get to talk to people with all different kinds of interests and hobbies, and we get to explore what creativity really means to them by sharing their stories and by asking the same three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? And then we have a free-flowing conversation and we see where it goes from there. So my inspiring guests have varied from handwriting specialist, social worker, recovering perfectionist, Reiki masters, and so many more. And by sharing their stories, the intention is to reinforce that when you take action, incorporate your voice, your expression, your interests into your daily life, I promise you, you will feel more empowered, more connected, and dare I say, happy. So my inspiring guest for today, her name is Audrey Appleby, and she builds bridges of possibility and magic to inspire you to find your passion. In everything she creates, from music to dance to art, she stirs people from 1 to 100 years of age. Literally, she has worked with the whole span. With positivity to survive and flourish in good and bad times. For Audrey, creativity happens whenever there is a need inside herself or coming from others who reach out to her. One of the most powerful times she creates is when a door opens due to cataclysmic events bringing change. So I am so excited to speak with my guest, Audrey. So Audrey, you are in the space. You just need to press a button that might say call in or connect. So that way I can invite you in. There we go. Hello, Audrey.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. It's really, really nice.
Thank you. And I'm so excited that you are here. So in reading your bio and all of that good stuff. I'd love if you could tell us just, I know there's like, you could tell hours worth of stories about what you do, but if you could kind of just sum up, you know, who you are and what you do, that would be great.
Okay. Well, who I am. I'm a person who's always trying to find my way and to do something that keeps me surviving in a wonderful way and keeps me reaching out to other people to try to make them, help them to feel excited about their possibilities in their lives. So what do I do? Well, I started out a very good student and my father was a doctor and he wanted me to be a doctor. And I went to college thinking I was going to be a psychologist because I didn't want to be a doctor. But things changed and I always found myself drawn since little to dance, but not technical dance, really more, again, magical, inspiring other people and myself in dance and making up ideas. So I, at a certain point, I did go into a degree, a very difficult degree, believe it or not, as an MBA in business, because I was trying to teach dance and sing, and I was getting nervous at about age 24 that maybe I needed a backup plan in case I didn't become a Broadway star. So I did get this business degree, and after 2 years, I was not feeling it was the right direction. And I was very lucky that I was able to start a kind of dream. I knew I could do it. And my husband kept saying, don't do that. It's very hard. But I started a dance school in my house in Connecticut. And I just had a huge passion for it and a love of it. And then after a few years, and again, it was inspiring people. It was helping people. I could do anything they asked, but basically for people who just, they weren't professionals. They just wanted to feel good about themselves, great about themselves. And I found that I loved doing that. So at a certain point, though, I missed my performing myself. And so I started performing with singing again, doing cabarets. And it led to a very sad event happened with my father passing away. And that's when all this surprise started pouring out of me with writing poetry, which I'd never felt I'd never even thought of doing. And I'd not done well. That was the one thing I had not done well with in college, was a creative writing paper. And that was the end of that for me. So suddenly 100 poems poured out of me and I wanted to make them into songs. And I found a musician who helped me. And that started this whole path from about 1998 till now of writing my own songs, performing them. You know, other people now sometimes want to sing them. So it's all been exciting. And the whole way along, I've just, you know, really sad things have happened, especially recently for all of us. And I've just kept wanting to survive and make things better for myself and for others. And so that song you just played in the beginning was kind of an example of, it's like I'm dancing and I'm dancing with a tragedy. And, you know, but I want us all to feel like we're going to make it. So there you go.
Well, you sum that up very well. And, you know, as I was listening, I was just thinking you've had such a rich variety of modalities in your life. And you said so many wonderful things. I mean, you started off saying, you know, when you were younger, you enjoyed dance when you were younger. And then that kind of path and everything kicked in of people, you know, parents wanting what's best for you in their minds and pointing you in a direction. And you took it in the way that you took it. You ended up going to business school, but then you started a dance school, which was your passion. And then all of this happened, and then sadness came in and losing your father, and then opened up this whole other box.
Right.
This whole other container, which you weren't even aware that was really in there. And it led to this whole other. It's just, I think it's so great to be able to reinforce and tell those stories so people can understand that not everything is so linear.
Well, that's true. I used to go to a creativity counselor. It was like therapy for creativity. And she even said that. She said, it's not linear. It's things go in circles and they don't always follow one thing after another. And that's given me hope a lot. Mm-hmm. And even when I'm doing taxes, sometimes I have to listen to a song, or I have to get up and just move in a certain way, or just, you know, look at something that makes me happy as a way to then feed myself to be able to go back to something that's really hard for me.
Thank you for saying that. And even that is so real. Like doing the paperwork and doing like taxes and things like that. So yeah, that creative mind is just kind of like, no, I don't want to do it.
I know. Yes.
But then it's like, I have to reward myself, like you're saying. But I think that's good advice too, to be moving and like taking breaks. But I like to kind of set a reward for myself.
Yes. I used to feel like, no, you can't stop. You have to get something completed. But then lately, when I have a lot of things to do that are hard for me, such as parting with money when I have to pay big bills, I just am like, I'm going to listen to this song and then I'm going to go back to it. Or I'm going to go quickly take a walk and then go back to it. So I think it's important to give yourself little inspirations along the way of trying to accomplish and reach for things that are hard.
Definitely. Reach for things that are hard. I love that. Mm-hmm. It's not everything's comfortable.
No, a lot isn't. But then it's amazing how a lot is. And we just have to permit ourselves to find and feel those things that make us, each one of us, feel happy. And sometimes that's hard to allow, but we work at it.
Well, this is going to be good. This is going to be good. So, okay. So I'm going to do a very quick, you know, pretty simple would you rather here, and then we'll dive into the first question.
Okay.
So, Audrey, would you rather go to an amusement park or to the beach?
Oh, the beach.
Yeah. That's
That
a simple one, right? Well, I mean,
was
we'll have different answers. Do
easy.
you like going to amusement parks at all?
That would depend on what kind. I think as I've gotten older, they're kind of terrifying to me. The last time I think I went, well, I mean, if it were Disney World and it was, sort of a fantasy that's perfect and all that, then yes, an amusement park would be a lot of fun. I'm not necessarily a big beach person, but I mean, I think I was when I was younger, but I'm much more careful now. And let's put it this way: if it's a beach in the Caribbean where the water is flat and you can see everything, then I'd love to go to the beach.
Right.
But yeah, but amusement park, I vividly remember at the end of a recital for my dance school, taking the teachers and we went to an amusement park. It was a long time ago, and I remember going on this ride that turns you upside down, and I'm like, I don't need that anymore. I feel like life is just that way anyway. Why do I need to seek it
So funny. Yeah, totally. Anytime my kids have gone to an amusement park, it has always been with somebody else because I'd be a total joy kill. Because
Yeah.
they've done like the roller coasters that are like the Superman ride and everything, and so they're like literally flying in that position. Anyway, so.
Yeah. Well, I do remember when my daughter was probably 4 or 3, we went to this ski resort area in the summer, and there was a ride, I mean, some kind of a ride that you could go down the mountain on a little car, and you could control it. You, the parent, could control it. And I was going inching down the mountain, and there were all these angry parents and children behind me. I couldn't just let it fly down the mountain. I was terrified.
That's so funny. The things
Yeah.
that we remember. So, okay. So, Audrey and Judy, welcome to the space. So happy to have you here. So you know how this all works. Except now you're on the other end of this, being a listener. If you
Okay.
have any comments or questions, put them in the chat box. So, Audrey, the first question is, so how do you define creativity?
Okay, so I wrote this down because I probably don't need to have written it down, but I thought I just will. So I wrote, possibility, never saying it is impossible. I won't say what country they say that a lot, but you can imagine. It's another country. Finding the tiny opening when the world or your world is feeling like it's closing down and making that opening grow, even if a tiny bit, just believing that it could grow. Making something in your thoughts or a tangible object, if you want to make an object, or anything that moves you from one place to another in your mind and in the world. It doesn't have to be a painting or a piece of music. It's just moving in your mind a little bit. Helping others to feel possibility. Defying what others say is impossible and helping them by helping yourself first to go beyond what society defines as limits.
Wow, there was so much in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, recently something I struggle with is, I'm not 25, but I'm making songs and music, and there are well, the society would say there are limits, and I'm trying to not let that make me pull me down. And when I forget about those limits, I find so much coming at me that's wonderful, and so I'm not 16, I'm not 18, but I'm finding there's so many wonderful ways to go within my own strengths.
Well, and isn't that the beauty of aging?
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
the beauty of aging is, because I get it too, it's like there's always, no matter what age you are, wherever it's coming from, there's these societal ideas of what's right and wrong and good and bad
Yes.
and all of that kind of stuff. When you're a kid, well, don't do that, you're going to get hurt. And but if you didn't try doing it, then how would you know?
Right.
And that's coming from the parents. There's all that kind of stuff, but as we get older, and hopefully it's happening, I'm grateful to be seeing it in my children, actually, who are like 18 and 21, soon to be 18, but having so much more confidence. like stepping into themselves so much more and challenging that societal idea to be like, no, I don't agree with that. And,
yes.
And
yes.
I want to try this, or that doesn't fit me. I want to do something that has to help others, but I'm not going to prosper and grow if you make me do that. And I'm just like, oh my God, so much smarter.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
So, but I also really loved what you just said about finding a tiny opening and making it bigger.
Yes. Yes. I just thought of that as I was writing my thoughts out. I thought, wow, there's a way to think about it. You know, that everything is closing in, things feel terrible, the world is shutting down right now, or it was, or you're shutting down because of whatever other situations in your life, but just always try to find the tiny, tiny little bit of the light, a way to just push open a little bit, you know, and I feel like, what else can you do? You just lie down and stop? You've just got to try, you know, even if nothing comes to you, just believe that something will happen if you keep trying.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's settling for that status quo of like what's here. And it's just like, okay, fine. I throw my shoulders up. It's done. It's just like, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what do we can't just always, you know, accept that, because that's boring.
I remember, I used to work in advertising, and I had a really good job, but it didn't last very long. It lasted 2 years, but they basically said I wasn't ready to be promoted. I was 25 and, or maybe a little older. And they were like, you're not ready to be promoted. And so we're going to give another person a chance and we're letting you go. And it was so weird. I just suddenly out of the blue went, thank you. This is a gift. I said a gift from God. I'm not saying I believe in God all the way, but I was like, this is a gift from God, because I really don't want to be doing what's the next step in this job. And that was the day that I just went out and said, I really, really want to have a dance school. And my husband said, no, you don't want to do that. Everybody else in your town, in our town, already had dance schools. There were already two very strongly established in a not a big town. And I said, yes, I know I can do this. So it was like, it took this tragedy to make me suddenly go, I know I can do this other thing. And maybe it's not going to make a lot of money, but I think it's going to make some money because I love it so much.
Right.
So, and I really put my heart and soul into that for a long time. I loved it.
So wait, so then what was the time frame between losing that job and then starting this?
Oh, you won't believe it. I think what happened is it was something like, March 1st, they said, okay, we're letting you go. And I then for a month thought, I want to try to be a copywriter, because I knew I loved creative. Not that everything is creative. It depends on what helps you creatively, what makes you feel creative. So I went and took a copywriting course. And actually, I did really well in there, except that the teacher was horrible. He literally said, why are you doing this? You have no ability. And then literally, he used my slogan that I wrote. It appeared as an ad for California Closets a little while later. So, you know, I remember that was like interesting, because he made me, I just felt so awful. But 1 month after being let go, I took the class, and then the teacher said, what are you doing? And I thought, I don't know. And so it was 1 month later, my school opened May 18th, and I got let go probably March 1st. So there you have it.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had, it was an amazing day. I was so motivated. The cherry trees in my driveway had all shed their leaves, their flowers, and the whole driveway was carpeted in pink petals. It was like something out of a dream. And I had 32 people that day, because I had gone out with my sister, who was a professional dancer, and we'd done a performance in the park and handed out flyers. So I just knew right then, when I was let go from the other thing and the copywriting didn't work out, I just knew I can do this with the dance school. And I did.
That is so beautiful. The picture that you just painted in my mind of the petals on the driveway. And isn't it amazing, like, when those little, they're little, they seem little, but they're huge. It's that inspiration and that inner voice that you act on it. You take that inspired action and you're like, I am doing this. It just feels right. And it feels right. And I'm doing it. So then you open this with it like 2 months later and you have 32 students.
That was right. And it grew. I was so lucky I could do it in my house. For a long time, that was wonderful. After 7 years of it, it was not wonderful. But for 7 years, it was. And it gave me a chance to really establish it. And I was lucky that, you know, an artist by themselves was zoned to be able to do this in my house. So that was good. It grew. We had to finally move it out of the house. Well, maybe a year or so after doing it just for adults, I thought that's what I wanted to do. The parents, the adults were saying, why don't you do this for children? And I do love working with children. But my mother, who'd been a kindergarten teacher, said, you don't want to do that. And mm-hmm. I said, yes, I do. And that was really good because, you know, most parents care more about their children than about themselves. You know, and when their children are little, they want to do so many wonderful things for their children. And it just grew with that. It was amazing.
Right, right. And I mean, and then jumping to, I know that you created, so this is a whole different arena. Let me backtrack for a minute. I'm saying it out loud so I don't forget about the Alzheimer's working with seniors.
Oh, yes.
But you also went to Paris.
Yes.
And had a show. Tell us about that.
Okay. So basically, I started writing my own songs. Plus, I was singing. I love to sing in other languages. I really love it. Other languages meaning the Romance languages, French, Italian, Spanish, and Portuguese. And not that I speak all those languages, but I do speak French. I was pretty great at it. Now I've, you know, haven't practiced it in a while. But so my sister said to me that she knew an amazing jazz musician in Paris. And my first trip over there, I have a friend there who said, you can perform on a barge. And she had a friend who owned a barge. So the first trip I went over, I picked up the phone and I literally, in French, spoke to some other barge owners right across from the Louvre in the Seine and right across from Notre Dame in the Seine. And they said yes. So I had three performances, one on my friend's barge. And I brought an American musician over with me to Paris. And I've always loved making titles. You know, my dance school was called Magic Dance. In the beginning, it was Magic Dance on the Water, an island of dance in the city of Greenwich. So with my show in Paris, the songs, I called it An American Evening of Ballads and Blues. And I had a fantastic American musician who I'd worked with before. And I paid for him to come over. We my husband and my little daughter and I were swapping our house for someone's apartment. And my musician came and stayed something like 5 days or 4 days, and we performed in three different places. And he was, you know, so professional and wonderful. So we did that, and then I met this incredible jazz musician who's Parisian through my sister, and I rehearsed with him, and we did another show with him, and he started inviting me to sing a few songs at these famous jazz clubs in Paris. Even the jazz club that La La Land, the movie, had a scene in the end where they're dancing through this kind of cartoonish background, but there's one part where they're dancing in a real club in Paris called Caveau de la Huchette. And I sang there because my musician, Ludovic de Pressac, was a very well-known musician, and he was really nice, kind, and he let me sing with him and his band. You know, I didn't do the whole show there, but I did a whole show with him on two barges. And then I had my American musician come for a few days as well. So that was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. But I mean, and this all happened. I mean, first of all, it's just so cool that you got to sing on a barge, you
yes.
know, Eric. But then you were inspired. You're like, I'm going to call up these other places. And then you found two other barges to sing on.
I know. You know, it's not as easy anymore. When I did it, I think it was like 1998 was the first time. And they just loved an American girl singing, you know, American songs. I was like, it was easy. They picked me. They called me the Paris Time Out magazine pick of the week. And that was amazing, you know, but it's gotten harder because I went back to one of those barges and one of the barges had been turned into more of a wedding venue. So they weren't that interested. And another barge, the man was not very nice. He was a new owner of the barge. And, you know, he kind of looked at me skeptically and said, well, do you have a movie of yourself? Do you have this? So now I know if I ever want to do that again, I've got to be prepared for a whole different level of, you know, jumping through a hoop to be able to do it. But because of this nice musician, Ludovic, I probably still could. And I've invited him. He and I have performed in Greenwich, Connecticut. I've got a number of performances for him with me there. So that was great.
Mm-hmm. So did you end up on Broadway in any way?
No, I did not. I auditioned for a number of things. I even auditioned for Grease, the Broadway show, the first time it came out on Broadway, because that's how old I am. And I was first in the dance audition, and I'm not on that level. To be a Broadway dancer, you are like a machine that can, you know, do five pirouettes in a row. And I wasn't like that. So what happened is, by the time I was 25, I was performing my own cabaret shows with one or two musicians in some very wonderful clubs in New York. One was called The Ballroom. And, you know, very famous people were performing there too, like Peggy Lee, cabaret performers. And it was in the area of New York that's known as Soho, and the street was West Broadway. And mm-hmm. So I started doing that. But no, I never made it to Broadway, unfortunately.
But I love that you were doing something in this, you know, a different kind of venue that's more personalized.
Yes. Well, I really found incredible venues. I performed through a girl who I went to high school with. I didn't even ask for this, but she heard that I was performing at Steinway Hall, which Steinway pianos are the grand pianos. And I have to say, this is amazing. One of my best friends, Roseanne Gold, who's a very highly thought of person in the food world, she said to me, you should perform at Steinway Hall. This was about 1998 or 1999. And through Steinway Hall, it was an amazing setting. And through that, another friend from high school came to me and said, would you like to perform on a barge that's underneath the Brooklyn Bridge?
Ooh.
And it's called Barge Music. And it was a venue for just classical music. But my friend from high school had worked for this woman who owned the boat. She was an older woman, very amazing woman, the one who owned the boat. And I got to perform on it. And there is an incredible photo, I'll send it to you, of me in the year 2000 with my arm up in the air in a red dress with the Twin Towers of New York still standing.
Wow. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. And so I performed on that boat. I will say, it was not the easiest place for people to find. It would be if you lived in New York, but my friends were coming in from Connecticut, many of them, and it was a horrible rainy night until it cleared off. But, you know, that was late when it cleared off. So we got a beautiful picture of the Twin Towers. But anyway, yeah, so I've sought out really amazing venues. And the most recent venue was a little club down on 12th Street in the East Village. It was, at the time I performed, it was called Noctambulo, and then it became known as Pangea, and it's now on the circuit for cabaret singers, but when I performed there, it was just beginning, and I loved it there. It was like, they called it a supper club, and it was adorable, and I got up about 100 people, like three different nights, so that was amazing.
Yeah. Do you think that... I mean, I know times are just different now in general, but even before all of this, the pandemic and everything, do you think that whole music scene and all these different, do you think it's changed a lot, or just that there's always going to be these great venues that exist? It's just a matter of finding them.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the really, how shall I put it? Some of these venues in New York that really thought ahead, like Birdland, they immediately, when the pandemic broke out, they asked, I believe they asked for, you know, donations. And they started immediately, I believe, putting performances on, you know, recorded videos so that you would pay. I believe this is what they did. I think they were very smart. I think a lot of little venues are struggling in New York City, and I don't know what's going to happen. There's a place called Don't Tell Mama that's a real, you know, cabaret place, and I think they'll survive. But, you know, there's been a lot that's changed because we're able to see things pre-recorded online. It's not the same as going live, but I really hope it comes back. I sort of feel a little shell-shocked with, you know, in fact, I'm writing a song right now called Birds in Glass Cages about all of us right now being like behind glass. You know, it's like we're looking through our Zoom, you know, computer window. We're on our iPhone with glass. We're behind our windows. We can't touch the people that are in the hospital dying of COVID. We can touch the window. So, you know, I don't know how this is totally going to change things. I do feel people need to reach out and be social and be with each other. So I hope it comes back. I really do.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think that right now is like a transition time. Mm-hmm. I do believe that things will come back. What that looks like, one never knows. But it's just this kind of newness. We're walking into this new phase of things. Yeah. But there was something I just thought of and it just popped out of my head.
It'll come back.
It'll come back.
Interrupt me if you're asking me something.
It was right there. I should have written it down.
Was it something to do with, do I think things are going to be changing with the venues, the music scene?
I don't, it'll come back. It was off of something that you said, but, anyway, so, let's kind of fast forward a little bit because we're going to get to the second question soon, but which is pretty much kind of leading into the second question of how you incorporate creativity into your life. So I guess we could just kind of go there. But I kind of want to lead with something and then hear more from you on this documentary that you created with Alzheimer's. Yeah.
Oh, you want, you got cut off a little bit because I told my mother before we started, please do not call me. And I just saw she tried. So I just cut her off. But you said you're basically asking me about the Alzheimer documentary.
Yeah. I mean, the second question is how do you incorporate creativity into your own life, which we'll dive into. But I guess I'm kind of leading in with, I really want to hear and have you tell people about this documentary that you created.
Yes. Well, so I love movement and dance and music. And so I've taught people of all ages. And there was a woman whose little daughter had taken dance with me when she was 5 years old. That woman said to me, how would you like to teach my mother? And her mother at the time was about 80 years old. And she said, my mother has Alzheimer's. But she said, my mother loves music and movement. And I said, well, gosh, you know, I think I've done everything else with movement and music except that. I have not worked with Alzheimer's. I had at that point worked with people who were mentally challenged in different ways, but not. Well, I will. I just had to cut my mother off again. I'm sorry. She might think that I told her not to, but she's forgetting. Okay. I thought to myself, oh, I bet Alzheimer's will be like teaching little children. I thought that. And so I went to observe. I observed her mother and 20 other people with Alzheimer's in an Alzheimer facility in Stamford, Connecticut. And I thought, wow, they're not like two-year-olds because they have a lifetime of memory inside. And what I started noticing was that when you put on the music, these people who weren't able to get up or talk or remember anything, suddenly were singing every single word of the music of their courtship years. Because that was this, believe it or not, for you and me, whatever the music was that was popular when we were going out and dating and falling in love, is the music that when everything else goes in our minds, it's the last pathway in your mind that doesn't go with memory, if you lose your memory. And we'll probably remember those songs that really lit us up in our romance times in the beginning of our, So I realized these people are not like little children at all. They are very complicated and they're bringing a lifetime of memory. So I was loving it. And this lady that I was working with, I would work one-on-one with her. And then the facility, which has branches all over the country, wanted me to also work for them, working with the 20 other people. So I would come once or twice a week and I would do an hour each time of music and movement. Even if they were in wheelchairs or they were half asleep, they would perk up and they'd sing. This one man was 100 years old and he said, "Do you know how old I am?" And I said, "Well, how old?" And he said, 100. But he was so into swing dance from his wheelchair. And, you know, he could do the just moving to the beat. And it was like swing dancing. So anyway, I really loved that. And then this was interesting. My daughter, who at the time was at the Tisch School within NYU for filmmaking, she said she had a documentary class that she needed to do an assignment. And I said, "Why don't you come observe what I'm doing? It's really amazing." And so she did come, and she came with a really high-quality camera and another person who was a student, and they started recording everything I was doing. And then it led to... keeps trying to call in. Are you still there?
Yes.
Gosh, I'm sorry. Gosh. Okay. She
have your husband text your mom or call her and say she can't talk.
Well, that's another problem, is my husband is not too well. Let me see if I could ask him to please text her. But anyway, so I did make this video, and my daughter became not available to finish the whole thing. So I edited it myself. It was 60 hours and I brought it down to 45 minutes, but then I got somebody to bring it down to 15 minutes. Hold on one sec. Oh, Jim, could you do me a big favor and call my mother and please tell her that I will be calling her after I'm off of the podcast? She's been trying to call in 4 times now and I'm on a radio show. Can you please help me out? Okay. So how do you handle things in cataclysmic moments?
I love this.
I'm trying to be cool because I am sandwiched in between, you know, my husband has big problems with his health and now my mother. And so it's very interesting. Anyway, so back to this other thing. So we made this video and then I sent it out to a lot of film festivals, and it's only 15 minutes. I did that on purpose because I wanted it to go to like the most famous film festivals in the world, and well, they didn't accept it, but I did get accepted. And I'm so sorry. Are you still there?
I am.
What can we say about that? Some people just don't learn. Anyway,
it's pretty comical. So
yeah, it is. Oh my gosh. Okay. So So what else can I tell you? I did get accepted into a French film festival that was really an American festival, but international. It's called ethnography. It's like a word they made up about the human condition, and so they accepted it there. And it was also accepted by the New Haven Film Festival. Oh, but another thing I did, which was really fun and interesting, I had it screened in the big movie theater in Greenwich, Connecticut, and I got a panel. I got the head of Alzheimer's from Yale and Greenwich Hospital to be the doctor on the panel, and then I got a music therapist who was a friend of mine, but she was a music therapist, and she has worked with, you know, people with music and with, you know, Alzheimer's. So she was there, and then we showed the film, and then we had over 100 people come to the Greenwich movie theater, and they asked questions for 2 hours, and I recorded it. It was amazing. So what I keep saying to myself is I wanted to do something to help people. I wanted to make more of this movie. I wanted to make it a longer documentary or an app for the iPhone, you know, of how to help people whose parents have Alzheimer's. So that's a big project. I found that I chose to work more on my own music right now and performing. I'm finding the writing is really helping me, and I love it. Mm-hmm. And it's helping me. As you see, I've got quite some situations. My husband has very serious cancer. Just mm-hmm. today, I was, you know, arranging for another operation he has to have. And then we've got my mother, who can tell there's something going on there. So, mm-hmm. but, you know, so, and then I came out here to California, not because it was my idea. It was my husband's idea, because he wanted to be somewhere beautiful in case he was going to pass away. And I always had a fantasy about being here. I didn't really want to come, but then it's been wonderful to be here. And then the pandemic caused me to be here longer than I thought. So it's been really amazing to be here. And our world changing so much, in that it's almost like it doesn't matter where you are. You can still communicate with people and be in classes with people all over the world right now. So it's kind of been interesting and amazing. But so that's the story of the Alzheimer's.
So how long have you been in California for?
Oh, we came out here November 16th, 2019. We were supposed to go back home to Connecticut March 2020. And guess what happened? Coronavirus. Yes. And mm-hmm. now, my husband being very sick, we didn't feel safe to get on a plane. And we liked it here. So, and I felt, I'm not finished with California. I feel really excited being here. It's got everything New York has in a lot of ways, although, of course, it doesn't. But it's got a lot of other things that I always wanted to try but was scared to try. So I feel like, you know, out of a tragedy, and P.S., while I was here a month after coronavirus, my back developed. It probably was growing in my back for a long time. Spinal stenosis, which I had to have a serious back operation December 3rd of this past year. And it's worked out really well. So all I can say is, boy, you know, sometimes it's like so many tragedies, but yet I'm just, you know, I'm happy that I'm finding that little tiny opening to, you know, keep making things happen.
That is such a perfect way to go back to that little tiny opening.
Yeah.
It's so, so true, though. I mean, because what you're talking about is like to a major extreme. I mean, you have so much going on, but yes. It's the perfect thing to be saying of, I mean, you have these interests that you've nurtured. You're nurturing these spaces and you're wanting growth.
Yes.
And pushing through. It's that we wither and die when we're not putting our roots down and growing. And like, you know, if we just, like we said in the beginning, if we're just like, we put our shoulders up, we're just like, okay, well, that was hard.
Yes.
I'm done. Then it really doesn't go anywhere. But you are incredible with, again, you mentioned that the stories, the words are just coming out of you, referring back to when your father passed.
Yes.
And you didn't know that you could have all this flow out of you. And it just did. It was like this other medium, this other modality that just like was like, blah, came out. And again, it's like your writing is coming out. It's just, it's like as you're talking, I'm seeing this string of just like the word connection. Mm-hmm. is just there in big letters. It's just like that. That's what you do, is you connect.
Yeah. I really wonder when I go back to a more, you know, social life where we really get together. And I wonder if I'll be able to think this way. It's really interesting how, you know, hard times can make, I remember talking to this musician who helped me in the beginning write songs. And there was this one song he'd written that was so beautiful. It was instrumental. And I said, that is gorgeous. And he said, yes, well, I suffered a lot, you know, and that's what came out. So I have to say, I hate to say this, but sometimes I don't know how great I'll be when I'm so happy, if I'm ever so happy, if I'll be able to think of all these things. Because things just have a way of expressing themselves right now to me, insights. And, you know, I remember when this pandemic started, there was a lot of connection that started happening. First, it was like, this is like a snow day that, you know, doesn't end. Like you're in elementary school or something and you get to not go to school, but it just kept going. And I remember feeling like, I don't know what to do. And then it's interesting how from that somehow things started filling in.
Yeah. 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 I mean, the whole thing with expressing and insights, I think that this time, and it's not downplaying, there's been a lot of, you know, stuff going on for people, but yeah. I think that there's a lot of time to kind of go inward for better, for worse,
yes.
And kind of learn more about ourselves and things that either we're going to step forward and do something about it and change it, or, you know, whatever happens, but more connection. Like I've met people, you know, all over the world that I never would have met before.
Yes.
If this didn't happen. So there's gratitude. There's so much gratitude and growth as within our family. Like we were doing things, we were much more connected. Honestly, my husband would travel a lot and he missed a lot of the kids' life because, yes. And I was busy with working but we were forced to stop. So, and especially with the kids being older now and getting to that next point of how that's going to change, it's been nice to have the time with them.
Oh, yes, because you're telling me the age of your children. And I do remember when my daughter went off to college, and it's kind of, that's a whole other step in life, you know, when you're the empty nest step maybe, but this is really like a special time where, you know, in us too, we moved out here and that's where my daughter is, California. And so it's been really, even though coronavirus, we've gotten to see her sometimes 6 feet apart and all of that, but outside, but it's been nice to be able to be in touch with her more.
Right, right. The connection again. Mm-hmm. And this film, is there any place where people can see this film? Because
the Alzheimer film?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I will allow it. I have not wanted to put it out on YouTube yet because how many years ago was it that I did it? I kept saying, because you're going to make a full documentary and you're going to submit it to all these places, but I think I will. Yes. What I'll do is how shall I make it available for you to tell people about it?
Well, I mean, we can figure it out and you can let me know. Doesn't have to be right now, but we'll talk about it. And if it's don't do anything that you're not comfortable with, but if you're...
I do have a trailer that's, and I have a link to the trailer on Vimeo. So but that's only about a minute long.
Okay. Maybe,
yeah. I've been sort of like, I don't want to put it out there until I make, you know, a decision about, is it going to be an app on the iPhone or is it going to be a documentary? Do I want to submit it? But let me think about that because it's really beautiful and it's really helpful to people. I got so many people from all over responding to me and wanting to you know, have more and to talk to me about this. I got a lot of wonderful feedback from it when I put it out there. So I think you're right. I think it should be out there. So I'm going to talk to my guru and I'll let you know how it could be available. Cause yeah, it's 15 minutes. And if I go further with it, it's going to be much longer and there's going to be a lot more to it. So I think it's valuable and I do want to help people. I think they should see it. It's very special. It's all about what it's about is, how does music and movement evoke memory and emotion in Alzheimer's? And I said to you that the people started sitting up and singing and knowing every word and wanting to move. So yeah, it was very special that way.
God, I mean, it's just, and I love how you worded saying, because in the beginning you were thinking, oh, they'll be like children. Mm. But then making that realization of these are like, they've had a life.
Yeah, and they were very special. I loved them. And I was really sad. Well, the lady passed away. She was an unbelievable lady. Now that I think about it, why shouldn't an 80-year-old be able to ride a horse and fly a plane? But this lady could do those things, you know, and then she'd gotten Alzheimer's. She was a very unusual lady. And then there were 20 others that were unusual in this place in Stamford, Connecticut. So it was very, I learned a lot and I was sad when she passed away and then they didn't need me at that place anymore. But that's another thing I've learned. It's okay when things end because they don't really end. You keep them inside and you feel so proud and happy that, you know, you've done this and it's in you. So, and you know, there's openings to then take that and whatever happens with it. If I really want to, I could do something with that and help people in a lot of ways.
Well, just even, I mean, the way that you created the showing of the film, that was so brilliant to have the panel and then to bring it in into that way where you brought on a doctor and a, you know, the other people where people could really, I mean, they're getting real value.
Yes. Oh, people were really, really interested in it. And, you know, it was very urgent to many people because many people have a relative or know someone who has Alzheimer's and people are concerned for themselves about it. And so far, there's really no cure. Mm-hmm. You know, that was another thing. I kept saying, hurry up, Audrey. There's going to be a cure and then you won't have anything to say. But, well, there hasn't been yet. So I think it's, you know, it's special to offer this. And my way was through music and movement and what it, how it brought joy to these people and how they suddenly had a memory, you know, instead of having lost their memory.
Right. This is totally different. And I'm thinking of the whole movement piece because as you were talking, I'm like, you know, movement is just so important and it goes across, like it's just, it reaches everybody pretty much, even if there's restriction.
There's
some kind of movement. So my brother is, he's disabled and brain damage. But he went to a special needs school. So when my husband and I were first dating, my brother had a prom and we went and we were there as well. And so my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, he went out onto the dance floor and he was dancing. And when he dances, his body just flails kind of like all over the place. Here we are in a special needs school and everybody on the dance floor stopped and stared at him. Because he just stopped and looked at him like, what are you doing? And he stopped and he goes, what? Like, what's wrong? And it was just that story kind of popped into my head. It was just, you know.
That's so funny. Yeah.
I knew he was a keeper from that point.
So funny. Anyway.
So we are getting to the top of the hour, which means I want to get to the third question.
Okay.
And the third question is, so why is creativity important?
Okay. Well, I wrote, it hurts physically and mentally to decide to give up. So to create, even in the worst of times, keeps us going. It lights our imagination and our hope that the cycle will change, that things will improve, the possibilities will come. If we can just survive and try to use the tragedies as a way to learn and try new ideas.
Mm-hmm. So creativity hurts mentally and physically.
It hurts. It hurts if you don't stay creative. To me, it hurts physically and mentally to give up. I mean, you know, people have said to me, oh my God, how can you stay so, you know, going ahead and positive with everything going on with you? And I'm thinking, it will hurt physically and mentally for me to stop. I can't. I've got to keep going. My problem is, you know, things started slowly with creativity out here with this whole situation with the pandemic. And then it just started snowballing and now I've taken on too much and that's painful too. I've got to stop because I remember at a certain point feeling so happy with this focus I was getting here because one of the ways that I usually fight feeling sad is to just get so busy and take on so much. And something about this pandemic forced me to not take on so much. You know, in the back operation also, I had to stop. I was doing teaching dance on Zoom and I stopped that. I got some other teachers to do that for me in Connecticut. So I have been taking on way too much creatively, but there's a balance. And if I stop thinking like I've got to find the little opening, if I stop that, it literally hurts me physically and mentally to stop thinking, trying to think, you know, creatively about whatever.
Yeah. I totally can relate to that. Yeah. And I mean, with your back, I mean, back surgery is major. I mean, that's a huge recovery.
Oh my God. Well, I am really lucky. I was told it would be a 6-month recovery, and with everything else going on in my life, oh my gosh, you know, and I had to do a lot of research into, here I am in California, and to me, the best place to get back surgery would be hospital for special surgery in New York. But I'm actually really proud of myself, and I'm putting this out there. I could help people telling you my process if anybody needs help, if you have to have something like this. I interviewed the top doctor in New York at Hospital for Special Surgery, and he gave me the gold seal to go ahead and have the surgery out here in Los Angeles with one of the top doctors here. But I was scared because I thought, you know, what does that mean? Am I going to be stuck out here? Can I continue to help my husband? It's coronavirus. I have to go into a hospital with coronavirus raging. I did. I had to do all of that. And I even at a certain point found out about a doctor who he's a very successful doctor. And my father-in-law told me about him. He gives you a shot in your back that surrounds your troubled area so that it helps your back. I don't want to go into all of it, but it turned out I had to really investigate that, because that could have been sounded so great and easy, but it turned out it wouldn't have been addressing my problem. So I learned a lot about my problem, and I went through 9 months of dragging my leg and being in incredible pain every night with my back. And the way it manifested was a pain going down my leg. I had to take 6 Advil a day to just get through the day. And I was really hesitant to just jump. I was so scared to have a major back operation. So I tried physical therapy. And being that it was coronavirus, I had to do the physical therapy telehealth, you know, on the computer, not in person. I was scared to go anywhere in person. But I finally did it. And I went into a hospital, Cedars-Sinai. At the time I went into it, it was the height of coronavirus in LA. And so, yeah, it's been quite a journey, but I learned a lot about that. Yeah. And I'll tell you, my back has done really well. It's been only 2 months now, and I'm allowed to ride a bike, not for a long time, but I'm allowed to. Now, the other night I tried to do this little dance. There's an app on the iPhone about dancing, and that was not a good idea. I tried, and it was really fast motion, you know, because it's hard to not gain weight during this whole thing, you know? And so I tried to do this dancing, and other than marching, it was not a good thing for me, the way this girl in the video was moving her arms side to side and up and down really fast. So I know I should not be twisting. I've got to be very careful, because I really have done well. If it's a 6-month recovery and already at 2 months, I'm in this great a position to be able to walk. I can walk 2 miles, and I can bike ride a little, and I can swim. So it's, yeah, I really feel like that's been quite the experience.
You are such an inspiration, Audrey. I mean, you really, with so much going on and so many, it sounds like this whole, you know, again, the word cataclysmic, when these things of extreme things have happened, and there have been many, you really approach things in such a, you know, you deal with it. You get the information, you connect with people to find out more. And then you also take this inspired action, and, you know, you get things done.
I've got to tell you, the thing that scares me the most is not all of the things I'm going through. What scares me the most is if I have to clean out this apartment. That's the scariest thing of all. I am not good at that. And then my husband was saying, well, you know, we could clean out our house in Connecticut and rent it out. That is really scary to me. I am not going along with that yet. That is probably the scariest thing I've ever heard of in my life, because that house is a cluttered, very interesting house, but cluttered. And I'm not good at that. So I'm really noticing how great I am at this whole form of creative survival. But things that most people would be good at, like cleaning out an apartment, I'm like a 1-year-old. I'm not good.
But you know what? It's understanding what our strengths and weaknesses, again, it's the beauty of being older. It's great to learn it when you're younger, but you admit certain things. It's like, that's when I get someone to help me because it's not my strength. I'm willing to learn and do things, but somebody else is really good at it and they can help me with it.
Yeah.
So there's beauty in that.
I hope so, because I'm, you know, I'm looking around here and, you know, what was supposed to be a 4-month stay has turned into, we've got a fully furnished place here. It's really, there's a lot to clean out. It's kind of scary. But yeah, I have a friend who cleaned out something. I have different friends who are good at it. And plus I'd have to hire some help to do that for me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more emotional. It's like an emotional problem. It's not moving things into boxes. It's emotionally sad to me. So that's
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, objects represent things and, you know,
yes,
emotional connection is, that's a whole other thing. But, you know, we're at the top of the hour and I want people to be able to know how to find out more about you. So can you please tell people how to connect?
Sure. Okay. Well, my email would be a great way to connect, and it's my name, which is it's Audrey Appleby at yahoo.com, which is AudreyAppleby at yahoo.com. Then I have my website, AudreyAppleby.com. And I believe there is a way on that website to contact me. Yes, there is. And there's something in contact, and you can send an email like that. My music is all over every platform. I love that word, platform. Spotify, YouTube, iTunes, Apple Music. Now, I won't say this too loudly or my Alexa will go off, but you can speak to your Alexa and say, play Alexa, play the music of, oh, here it comes. Alexa, play the music of Audrey Appleby.
He's always listening.
And it will play all my music. Now, you can't ask for a specific song unless you have the Amazon subscription within your Alexa or whatever, or your Google Drive or whatever it's called. But and also, I didn't say this, but I have an album of children's music as well as my very sexy albums, like Ladies' Cheap Cocktails is one of my albums, and my Dancing with Tragedy is a new song, and I even have a Me Too song. So I've got a lot of songs on those apps and on all the platforms. And if you go to my Facebook, Audrey Appleby, I even did an instruction for my friends who are friends. Most of my friends don't even know what Spotify is exactly. So I did a little Audrey Appleby heartfelt, kooky, you know, how to get into Spotify, because it turns out, as I call it, to be the goddess of the new music business. It really, if you can get people to listen to your music on Spotify, Spotify can put you into all these playlists that go all over the world. And you can get a lot more people to love you. So it's kind of neat. But if you don't know how to do Spotify, you can go to my Facebook and learn, or you can just go to YouTube or iTunes or Apple Music or any of that.
Well, Audrey, I'm going to put all this information, like I said, in the bio of the podcast so people will be able to see. But I am so grateful that you have taken this hour to talk. I really, it's so wonderful meeting you. And thank you.
I loved it. I really loved it. Thank you so much for making my mind go through all these different thoughts and questions and trying to answer them.
Yes. My pleasure. And I am so grateful to all of the listeners. Thank you so much for being here live, and for all the people listening to the replay in whatever part of the world that you are in. This space is all about connecting, inspiring, and sharing stories. So please like, follow, and share so we can get the word out and just empower each other. And again, going with that word connection, that's what we're here to do, is connect each other. So I am going to take this podcast out with a little bit more music from Audrey Appleby, and this is Dancing with Tragedy.
Take back my power. I pick the music and do what I do the best. Dancing with Tragedy, my new way of life. Living in a plastic bubble nightmare, but I know I'll be alright, 'cause I make
sleepless nights of inner fights, thinks he's got the best.